Researchers at the University of Florida found that people would rather be blind, deaf, or lose a limb than obese. And yet one quarter of us heading towards one third are obese and two thirds overweight. That doesn't make sense.
Wow, talk about somebody who grabs you by the throat in 15 seconds. Absolutely incredible. Her name is Zoe Harcombe. She's about to join us from across the pond. She's the author of The Obesity Epidemic, What Caused It, How We Can Stop It. I've just been reading some of the comments on the back cover, which I just can't get over. They read, there is a way to lose weight and keep it off. There is a way to lose weight and keep it off, but the first thing you must do is to throw away everything you think you know about dieting. Throw away everything you think you know about dieting, because everything you think you know is actually wrong. The diet advice we are being given, far from being the cure of the obesity epidemic, is in fact the cause. Oh my goodness. It goes on to say, we want to be slim more than anything else in the world. So why do we have an obesity epidemic? If the solution is as simple as eat less and do more, why are 90% of today's children facing a fat future? What if the current diet advice is not right? What if trying to eat less is making us fatter? What if everything we thought we knew about dieting is wrong? This is, in fact, the case. This book will debunk every diet myth there is and change the course of the obesity epidemic. Pam Colleen, our nutritional consultant, is in this morning. Talk about rocking the boat.
Andy, but look at some of the headlines we've been seeing lately. Even in the Globe and Mail, there's been a couple of recent stories saying that we've been wrong to vilify animal fats. So slowly but surely, in mainstream consciousness, we're going to start learning more and more and more how we've been misled on the dietary recommendations that we're getting from people like Health Canada.
This is going to really annoy the people who are critical of you, Pam Colleen, because what you've been saying for years is now showing up in what's more mainstream media than the Globe and Mail. This is an article published Tuesday, March the 18th. So this is less than 10 days ago, an article by Carly Weeks. Google it, folks. I only have to read the first couple of lines. Just when you think you've figured it out, somebody comes along and tells you you've got it all wrong. And she's talking specifically about this issue.
Yeah, the media is going to have to eat crow on this. The universities are going to have to eat crow. I mean, a lot of the front groups that are out there endorsing a high-carb, low-fat diet, they're going to have to eat crow as well. And I mean that literally.
Okay. Now, you have arranged for us to talk to this author, Zoe Harcombe. I just had a horrible thought. It is 10 o'clock in the morning, which means in Britain it's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It's tea time. Nobody interrupts tea time. But we're gonna give it a shot. Just before we go to Zoe, Heather Gingrich, our friend down in Ingersoll, has a comment. Hi, Heather.
Hey there, Andy. How are you?
Good.
Hey, Heather.
Hey, I just wanted to comment on obesogens in general. Water chemistry, flow. Artificial fluoridation in the water is going to slow down your normal thyroid function, which is going to cause you to put on more weight for the calories that you eat. It's also going to cause you to have kidney dysfunction, which is going to cause you to retain fluid and be heavier. And it's also going to have effects on your joints that are going to make you sore and not want to exercise and expend the energy that you really need to.
Heather, let me ask you. You're a mom. I think you have two or three children.
I have three.
Three. That statement from Zoe, I'm going to play it again because I find it so jaw-dropping, and I'm going to ask you your thoughts on the comment before we talk to Zoe. Go ahead, Ryan.
Researchers at the University of Florida found that people would rather be blind, deaf, or lose a limb than obese. And yet one quarter of us heading towards one third are obese and two thirds overweight. That doesn't make sense.
You have children. You know what they get teased about or don't get teased about in the schoolyard. You know what the thing is that you don't want to be in the schoolyard. What do you think of that statement from Zoe about people would rather be blind or deaf or lose a limb rather than be fat?
Well, I know absolutely from personal experience that being the fat kid is a huge cause of bullying.
You were the fat kid?
No, I wasn't.
Okay.
But I saw the other fat. It was one of the reasons why I, you know, here, Andy, this is how crazy it was. I was so afraid of seeing what happened to the fat kids happen to me that I was anorexic. I had an eating disorder.
Mm.
So, you know, thankfully, you know, I sort of crossed paths with people like Pam and things like that, other people who helped me recover my health. So, but when you really see it, especially women who have eating disorders, and an increasing number of men also have eating disorders, so let's not forget that that's sort of a choir thing.
I don't know if you've ever heard this figure. A bus driver here in London, he was the president of the union, told me a couple of years ago that the average weight of a bus driver, a transit driver in the United States, because they had done a survey, the average weight was 350 pounds.
Oh, yeah. Now, okay, but let's think about what we know. You know, because I married into a Mennonite family. So I have a lot of relatives with a traditional build, you know, and a lot of them are bus drivers and long-haul transport drivers and, you know, farmers that, you know, drive tractors and stuff like that. One of the other things that they do, you know, not only do they have a sedentary job, you know, that's what they do to make money, that's what they do to put food on the table, that's sedentary, so you're not expending a lot of energy. But what are the other things that, you know, long-haul truck drivers and bus drivers do? They drink a ton of coffee,
mm-hmm.
you know, just to stay awake. Well, what's in the water that made that coffee in the city of London and in every municipality that, you know, has artificially fluoridated municipal water supply? They, you know, if you're at Tim Hortons, like Tim Hortons does not filter out everything else that's in the water.
Heather, we have to ask you to hold that thought because we have to go across the pond. We've got Zoe on hold. If you have more thoughts after we talk to Zoe, call us back. Okay, appreciate the call. Okay, Pam, the introduction for our very special guest of, when I heard that clip, by the way, she has such a delightful British accent, although she'll tell us it's us who talk funny. I felt like I had to polish my shoes and get my tie on. So while I do
that,
you're
looking quite dapper today.
And you go ahead and introduce her.
So this morning we have Zoe Harcombe on the phone, and she's an obesity researcher and nutritionist, and she's a graduate of Cambridge University. And she does join us from the UK this morning. Her book is called The Obesity Epidemic, What Caused It, How We Can Stop It.
Good morning, Zoe.
Good morning.
Couple of quick questions. Are we interrupting tea time?
You're not, actually. It's 2:15 in the afternoon in the UK, so I had my lunch a couple of hours ago, and I'll be having dinner in about 3 or 4 hours' time.
Next question. Do we talk funny, or do you talk funny?
People talk differently, don't they? Even in the UK, we have so many regional accents. I live in Wales at the moment, and if I'm with my Welsh friends, within 5 minutes, I'll be speaking in a Welsh accent, and you wouldn't understand me, so... All people talk funny, I think.
You have a delightful accent, pardon me for calling it an accent, and surveys have shown, at least in Canada, that if you have a British accent, you have a significantly greater hold, if you are a teacher, on the kids in your classroom because they never cease to be in awe of that accent. Zoe, we're not talking about accents this morning. We're talking about your book. Let's take a snapshot of... our health in North America. I'm thinking of all the health issues that Pam and I talk about regularly. Is there any health issue that's bigger than this one, obesity?
No, and people talk about obesity being a cause of other things. So people will say obesity causes heart disease, it causes cancer, it causes diabetes. I don't buy that. I actually think the same things are causing all of those things. So I actually think that it's the appalling foods that we're eating, these processed fake foods that come out of factories. And it's those that are causing obesity and heart disease and cancer and diabetes. So I don't see obesity necessarily as a root cause in itself. We've got to package this whole thing up and realize that human beings are just not designed to eat this stuff that's coming out of factories. And the sooner we realize that, the better.
Now, we're going to do some myth busting this morning. I want to break a bunch of myths, and I know you know a lot about them. So the myths that we want to break this morning are going to be the calorie myth, the salt myth, the animal fat myth, and the exercise myth. So which one would you like to start with first? Which is your favorite?
Whatever you like. No
okay,
problem.
Let me be the arbiter there. Probably one that's going to upset the most people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're going to drive off of Southdale Road as they're going over to the fitness forum.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, don't you tell me that I'm spending all this money and all this time and all this effort on the treadmill and in the pool, and it's all for naught. Zoe, is that what you're going to tell us? Let's start with exercise.
Yeah, exercise is a great thing to do for every reason other than weight loss. So it's good for your mood, it's good for your muscles, it's good for your heart, it's good for your general well-being, it's good for your skeletal structure, it's good for your body, but it is not going to help you lose weight. It really isn't. You know, it can make you hungry. People start rewarding themselves when they've been having exercise. We have so many problems with people who come into the real food arena and they're trying to carb load the whole time because they're trying to fuel this unnatural exercise. And I think the way to nail the exercise thing is to put it very, very simply. You know, I hope I'm not offending any different religions here, but, you know, my personal belief is that we've evolved from Australopithecus Lucy, if we want to trace back our sort of heritage, about 3.5 million years ago. And humans would have not evolved down that supply chain if we had not been supremely good at two things. One is gathering food, and the other is conserving energy. And we had to have been good at both of those. If we were good at getting food, but we used it up too quickly, we'd have died out. And if we were not good at getting food, but we were good at conserving it, we'd have died out. So we have evolved to be greedy and lazy. Mm-hmm. And now we're trying to say to people, don't be greedy and don't be lazy, and that's the only way that you're going to achieve natural weight. No, we just need to go back to eating what we've been eating for 3.5 million years, and everything else sorts itself out.
Yes, and you have a UK researcher who has concluded essentially that what they're saying about children today is that they're lazy and that they're not getting enough exercise. But what's really the precursor to that is that they're exhausted. They're just not getting the right fuel to give them the energy to go out and play soccer, for example.
Brilliant, brilliant point. I mean, yes, if you eat the government dietary advice in the UK, Canada, the US, Australia, New Zealand, you know, all of these modern economies, whether it's pyramids or plates, you know, our children are basically being told, base your meals on starchy foods, these white bagels and white breads and sugary cereals. And you're absolutely right. You know, there's no way that a child can actually fuel the body or the brain on that kind of food. But if they'd had bacon and eggs for breakfast, and we're having, you know, chicken salad and, you know, maybe liver and onions for lunch, and roast pork crackling, garden apples, whatever for dinner, you know, then they would feel nourished, brain and body, and they would naturally feel more active. And we do find with adults, let alone children, when you move them away from processed food onto real food, they suddenly have energy that they don't know what to do with.
Wow.
They suddenly find themselves exercising. You know, they're mowing the lawn, they're doing the ironing, they're cleaning the house. They're taking up a hobby because they're no longer addicted to food, so they have a whole heap of time that's become available to them, and they also just feel so much better. So I think that's a great point that Pam makes there.
Well, let me just think that through, Pam, because you know the exercise industry is a multi-billion.
And so is the weight loss industry.
And it's directly connected, and that's my whole point. If you took away the weight loss motivation from the exercise industry, it would shrivel and die in about 5.5 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Well, the BBC in the UK did that series, you know, The Men Who Made Us Thin. And yes, they show very clearly, right, Zoe, that the numbers that they use in these weight charts are certainly just arbitrary. So they're making people feel like they're fat when they're really probably not fat at all. But they want to drive people into the gyms and to weight loss systems.
I mean, let's just think about that for just a moment, Zoe. If you took away the weight loss motivation, what would happen to the exercise and fitness industry in the world?
Good question. I mean, I do think most people go to the gym because they want to lose weight. It's all part of the eat less, do more mantra. So, you know, there are two parts to that. People will say to you, if you want to lose weight, you've just got to eat less and do more. And that is the exact opposite to our hardwiring. You know, as we said a couple of minutes ago, we're designed to eat more and do less. Mm-hmm. You know, our body is not going to let us do the opposite. If we try to eat less, we want to eat more and do less. And if we try to do more, we want to eat more and do less. So we're continually driven to try to eat more and do less. And exercising is just going to take away the energy that we had to do other things. There was a great experiment in the UK in Plymouth called the Diabetes Peninsula Study. And they took some young children and they compared the children who went to posh schools and did rugby and cross-country and organized sports. And they compared them to the children that were at the not-so-posh schools and they didn't have organized sports. And at the end of the day, the posh kids would go home and they were tired. And they would just maybe watch television, play some video games, do their homework. And the not-so-posh kids who hadn't done sport were the ones who'd go out and kick a football around, go and call for their friends, you know, get into a bit of trouble, but go outside and play. And they were expending the same amount of energy, but just in very, very different ways. If you go to the gym, you're going to come home in the evening, you're not going to feel like walking the dog or doing the housework. You've used up your energy already. You know, we have a finite activity, and going to the gym isn't going to make any difference to your weight.
Mm-hmm. And now, what's happening in the UK with regards to sharing all of this knowledge around the theory of sloth and gluttony, you know, this do more and eat less? What's happening? Do you see anybody in the governments and the universities, are they embracing this? Are they understanding this?
Not in governments, no, unfortunately. I mean, what we are finding is probably as across the pond as well, there are a few people, doctors, researchers, you know, even people like Tom Norton, who would call himself an edutainer. We have a handful of people, Gary Toves, Michael Eads. In the UK, we've got Dr. John Briffa, Malcolm Kendrick, Asim Malhotra. We've got people leading the way saying, guys, we've just got this completely wrong. And I think the thing that's going to turn everything around is the internet mm-hmm. and talk shows like this. And we have a way of connecting people now that we just didn't have 20 years ago. So we can hear Gary Toves say everything we've ever thought about fat is wrong. And suddenly he can have a following of over 100,000 people because of books and YouTube and social media and, you know, the internet and blog comments and so on. And so, I think it's going to be a bottom-up revolution. Sorry, Andy.
Yes, terrific. We have to take a short break, Zoe. We'll be right back. We've busted one myth already, exercise. What I hear you saying, Zoe, is keep up the exercise. It's good, 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 but don't do it for the motivation of losing weight. And by the way, have bacon and eggs for breakfast. So that's the exercise myth. We want to move to calories, salt, animal food, and then your overall nutrition suggestions. Zoe Harcombe, author of the book The Obesity Epidemic, back with more in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Researchers at the University of Florida found that people would rather be blind, deaf, or lose a limb than obese. And yet one quarter of us heading towards one third are obese and two thirds overweight. That doesn't make sense.
Ryan, if the phone line lights up, I want you to know it'll be Deb Matthews. She's going to say, Ryan,
yes.
Please tell Andy I can't handle any more bad news. I have a crisis a day.
That she's looking into.
That she's looking into. And she'll get to the bottom of it. Well, I have another one for her. She just announced, Pam Killeen, recently, that she's going to force restaurants to post the calorie counts so that people will know what to eat and what not to eat. She thinks somehow that this is going to lead the way to better health. You say, and Zoe would say,
it's a calorie myth. I mean, it's mythology that calories matter. In the sense that she believes, and many people listening to the show believe, we need to do some major myth busting around the calorie theory. This idea that calories in, calories out will somehow fix this obesity crisis, and that's just not true. Correct, Zoe?
Absolutely.
Zoe, what is the myth about calories? And then bust it for us, if you would.
Okay. Well, the biggest myth, one of the things that many people will hold true, is that 1 pound equals 3,500 calories, and that is not true. And if anyone is sitting listening to this show right now saying, but I've seen it everywhere, I've seen it in women's magazines, I've seen it in men's magazines, I've seen it on the internet, source it. Try and find the source of 1 pound equals 3,500 calories, then try and find the source for if you cut back by 3,500 calories, you will lose 1 pound in weight. Because there is no evidence whatsoever, never has been, never will be, that any of that will hold true. And we've known that for 100 years, but it won't be admitted. Now, I'll show what I do. When I first thought, you know, where does this thing come from? Because I'm seeing it in government documents, and I'm seeing it in official dietary advice. I wrote to the Department of Health in the UK, the National Obesity Forum, the Association for the Study of Obesity, British Dietetic Association, National Health Service, all the major bodies on public health in the UK. And I wrote to them with a very simple question, and I said, please can you tell me where that formula comes from, and please can you prove it? And nobody was able to reply. And there were only two organisations that even tried, and the Association for the Study of Obesity and the Dietitians in Obesity Management Group came back and said, oh, we had a study, and we looked at 12 people, and they were given a deficit of, you know, whatever the calorie, I think it was 600 calories a day, for almost a year, and they ended up losing an average of 17 pounds. You know, so I did the maths, and it was kind of like, okay, so they should all have lost 80 pounds, not a, you know, a fraction less or a fraction more. It's a formula. It applies to everyone equally. It should apply to me at 110 pounds. It should apply to somebody at 400 pounds. You know, it's a formula. It's got to apply to everyone. And you're trying to tell me that on a study of 12 people, it was out by a factor of about 10. And in that study, some people lost a couple of pounds and some people lost, you know, a fifth of what you thought they might lose. You know, guys, you can't even prove it with 12 people.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a couple of billion people overweight in the world.
Okay, so if we fully understand what you just said, how should that change what we put in our mouths?
Forget calories. Absolutely forget calories. It's not about calories. You know, first of all, the formula just does not hold. So stop hanging on to a formula that you don't even know where it comes from. It's never been proven. You know, if you cut back by 3,500 calories, which is what every low-calorie diet is based on, they'll tell you have, you know, 7,000 fewer calories a week, so they put you on 1,000 calories a day, and you will lose 2 pounds a week. No, you won't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if that worked, I'm currently 110 pounds. I should be able to cut back by 1,000 calories a day and be 6 pounds in a year's time.
Now, a more accurate formula would be that it's carbohydrates that drive insulin and insulin that drives fat, correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And yet, would you count carbohydrates? It's certainly more sensible than counting calories, but there would still be no formula. You know, there would be no formula that would say have 10 grams of carbohydrate a day or 100 grams of carbohydrate a day and you will lose this amount of weight, because human beings just don't work in that way. They don't follow formulas.
So, Zoe, it amazes me. Sometimes we can make it really simple. I was at Costco last week, and that book, Wheat Belly, is still stacked up. I mean, they must still be selling. Is it selling in Britain like it is here?
Brilliant. I absolutely love that book. I think Dr. William Davis has done a brilliant, brilliant book there. I'm really glad it's selling well. You know, the more people who come off wheat and fake modern bread, the better for global health it will be.
Now, let's talk about another myth, and it's very, very pervasive in society today, and it is the salt myth. We evolved on salt. Many cultures all around the world, they had salt in their diet, and now we have salt phobia. Can you talk about the benefits of salt, please?
Oh, I mean, this one is just utterly, utterly absurd. We used to pay people in salt. The French word salaire, which gives us the word salary, is reflecting the fact that we used to pay people in salt because it was such a valuable commodity. The Romans realized that if the soldiers didn't get their salt, they would literally die of fatal disease. Your heart will give out if you don't have enough salt. We've got to have salt and potassium in the right balance. How we ended up getting away with demonizing an absolutely vital mineral just blows me away. I mean, it just makes no sense whatsoever. We had Salt Awareness Week in the UK just about 10 days ago. And the Salt Awareness, there's an organization called Campaign for Action on Salt and Health. So it abbreviates to CASH, and there probably is some cash in it somewhere. And they came out with a study of 340 children, and they said these children were going to be at serious risk of all kinds of disease because their salt was too high. And it's like, oh, hang on, you've just had a quantum leap there. You know, why is salt bad for you? There is no evidence whatsoever on its own that salt is bad for any particular condition. They have not been able to make any connection between salt and cardiovascular disease or salt and cancer or salt and diabetes or salt and anything. What they will sort of tend to say is, oh, if you've got a high level of salt in your diet, you're more prone to these particular diseases. Well, hey, guess what? If you've got a high level of salt in your diet, you're eating a bad diet.
Yeah, a lot of processed foods, right?
Okay, what's the link between salt and high blood pressure?
Okay, there is a link between salt and high blood pressure, but the body sorts it out. So essentially, we know that blood pressure, if you think of your body as a closed system, if you're holding water, so when people go to hot countries and they hold water, we know that blood pressure rises and it can be a risky time for someone who's got hypertension. So we know it's related to water retention. And of course, if you have a very salty meal, you are more prone to water retention. But it's very, very temporary, Because what the body does is as soon as you're in that situation, you've had the salty takeaway, your body makes you thirsty, the liquids contain the right balance of potassium, so your body will tend to go back into the right sodium-potassium balance, sort out the water retention, and life goes on as normal. The problem is if you carry on eating processed food and takeaways and things that we shouldn't be eating, your body never really gets the chance to get back into the balance.
I knew, Zoe, when I heard you make the reference to, we used to actually pay people in salt.
Yes.
I knew there was a connection between pay and salt because recently when I went to my boss and asked for a pay increase, he told me to go pound salt. So I knew there was a connection. Okay, now let's move to the fourth myth we want to bust. I actually get people who say to me, I love Pam Colleen, and there's a lot of stuff she says I'm working on, but if she mentions animal fat one more time, I'm going to throw my shoe at the radio. So we're not going to allow Pam to talk about animal fat. We're going to ask you to do the dirty deed and tackle this myth about if you eat fat, you'll get fat.
Oh, dear. I just sort of want to say to people, what do you think we've been eating for 3.5 million years? You know, the Ice Age only ended 10,000 years ago, and it lasted for 30,000 years. And, you know, in most parts of the world, if not in all parts of the world, we didn't have access to vegetation, perhaps not at all, and certainly not in any great quantity. So we ate anything we could catch. If it moved, it was food. And that's when we had the greatest development in man, basically, going from Neanderthal to rocket science.
Mm-hmm. That's when our brains grew.
More animal foods, yeah. Mm-hmm. It enabled our brains to develop. You know, we thrive when we get the essential fats and the vital nutrients that are in those animal products. You know, if you want a fun afternoon, just go on the United States Department of Agriculture All Nutrition Database. I think it's on a website called something like nutritiondata.com. And start playing around and put in liver and then put in an apple and see which one wins. And then put in sirloin steak and put in some bread. And then put in sardines and put in some lentils. You know, just keep playing around with plant food versus animal food. And you are not going to find a plant food to beat an animal food. You just won't.
Yes.
You know, these are not things that grow on trees. You know, vitamins, minerals, essential fats, complete proteins, they are found in animal foods. And unfortunately, I was a vegetarian for 20 years. I got it terribly, terribly wrong. Unfortunately, we do need to eat those things.
Oh, no, not another
recovering vegetarian.
Another recovering vegetarian. Zoe, how sick were you when you were a vegetarian?
Because I didn't eat processed food, it wasn't quite as bad as it could have been. So at least I had the number one rule right, which was I was eating real food. So I just wasn't eating meat and fish. I was eating dairy products. I was having milk. I was having eggs. But I think it was when I worked out I needed to have 39 eggs every single day to get 15 micrograms of vitamin D. And, of course, we don't get much vitamin D from sun where I live in the UK. That's when I realized I can't do this anymore. You know, I could have a small tin of fish and I would get my entire need of vitamin D for the day or 39 eggs. And I've never eaten 39 eggs. So I really started to seriously worry about my health when I started studying nutrition.
Okay, now, we do have to take a short break in just a moment. I want to, in the time that we have left, I always want to give people a takeaway so that they got a nice, tidy little list of things they understood and can act on. And I wonder if we can spend the next couple of moments talking about bad foods and good foods. Let's take a real run at bad foods. In fact, I would ask you, what is the one food none of us should ever eat?
Sugar.
Mm-hmm. There's the other white powder.
Now, I said never. Are you saying never eat sugar?
If you wanted to have one golden rule, that would be a really good one. Mm-hmm. I eat sugar in dark chocolate. It's the only form in which I ingest sugar. So if I have 90% dark chocolate, there's 10% room for anything that's not cocoa butter or cocoa powder, and that will be predominantly sugar. But that's the only form in which I would ingest sugar.
Zoe, have you ever heard of Tim Hortons? We have if you ever come to Canada, have you ever been to Canada?
I have relatives in Toronto.
Okay, if you ask them about
Tim Hortons, that sounds like an outlet that I want to be avoiding.
Okay, first of all, when you ask your friends about Tim Hortons, if they live in Toronto, they'll give you the history of the hockey player named Tim Horton. He was a legend who got so fed up with not being able to get a coffee and a donut on his way to hockey that he started his own chain which literally took over this country. That virtually every corner in every major city in this country has a Tim Hortons coffee shop. Now, we have one right next to the radio station. The basic rule is they plant one, then they hit a golf ball, and where it lands is where they plant the next one. That's the rule for Tim Hortons. So, but here's my point. I recently was at Tim Hortons, in which I was standing behind a guy who ordered a coffee, and he said, give me 4 creams and 10 sugars.
Oh, my goodness.
10 sugars. How would it affect our health if we just said what you just suggested, no more sugar, except in dark chocolate, perhaps? How would that improve our health?
Yeah, it's really difficult to see how we could have obesity at all, let alone an epidemic, if we could simply rid the world of sugar. One ingredient, and virtually every processed food disappears overnight.
And across from a lot of these donut shops, of course, there's a pharmacist. You know, the pharmacies are growing in droves,
yeah, make them
of course,
sick
as well.
And then give them the medications to,
that's the way
to make them healthy again.
That's the way Canada works. We get them to go to Tim Hortons on one side, and then we have Shoppers Drug Mart, is what it's called here, on virtually every other corner across from Tim Hortons. So let's go down the list. Sugar is on the top, but let's go down the list of foods we really need to cut back on.
Well, I say, I have a sort of principle the other way. You know, when people say to me, what should I do to be slim and optimally healthy? I say there's 3 words, and one of them we shouldn't need to say. I mean, the basic message is eat real food. Now, I resent having to call food real food. You know, I think the fake food producers should have to call theirs fake food, and then we can own the word food again.
Okay, then let's make the list. Give me the list of fake foods we should never eat.
It's everything that doesn't come from nature. So sugar is number 1, white flour is number 2, vegetable fats probably number 3, additives, preservatives. You know, if I stopped someone in a supermarket and gave them a white tablet and said, take that, they're obviously going to say to me, I don't know what it is. Of course I'm not going to take it. And I could look in their trolley and look at the ingredients list on any packaged food and say, do you know what maltodextrin is? Do you know what monodiglycerides of trifatty acids, you know, carnitine, whatever. Do you know what these things are? And of course they'll have to say they don't. It's like, what are you putting them in your body for then?
That's right.
The obvious ones are sugar and flour and vegetable oils. But there's a whole host of other nasty ingredients on every fake food that humans should just not be consuming.
As the expression goes, if a caveman wouldn't recognize it, then don't eat it.
In fact, Pam has these pithy little pronouncements, which I just love. If it's not touching the, I don't know how you do it in British grocery stores, but the advice here is if it's not touching the wall of the grocery store, don't buy it. In other words, in our grocery store, Zoe, let's compare notes. They put all the bacon and the eggs and the milk and the dairy products and all the real food against the wall. Everything processed is in the middle. Do they do it that way in Britain?
Not quite so straightforward. What they tend to do is the minute you walk in the shop, you have the fruit and veg, and then you walk past the deli counter. So trying to give you the impression when you walk in the store that it's all real food and it's all really healthy. And that's where I stop. You know, I've picked up the milk. I mean, most of my stuff I get from the farm shop, so it's not even the supermarket. But, you know, they give you the impression that it's healthy, and then you progress through the store, and then virtually every other aisle is cereals or cakes or biscuits or breads or, you know, just stuff that you just don't need to be eating.
Hundreds of thousands of foods.
Because 90% of what's in a supermarket is never going to go in my trolley.
90% of what you see in the grocery store is never going to go into your trolley. Just a quick word before we take the break. We don't know the word trolley here. What is a trolley?
You'd call it a cart, I think. Supermarket cart.
On our cars, we have a hood. What do you call it in Britain?
the roof.
The boot?
No, that's the,
the trunk.
The trunk is the
trunk,
yeah.
And what's the hood on the front called?
The bonnet.
The bonnet.
Yeah.
The bonnet and the boot. Are you still driving on the wrong side of the road, by the way?
Yeah, well, we are. I'm sorry about
okay.
that. We haven't gotten around to it.
Zoe, we've got some important business yet to do in our final segment. We'll be back in just a moment with Zoe Harcombe, the author of The Obesity Epidemic, with a great big picture on the front of somebody's great big belly. We need to talk about it, folks. It is probably one of, if not the most important health issue in North America. Back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. 1040.
Researchers at the University of Florida found that people would rather be blind, deaf, or lose a limb than obese. And yet 1/4 of us heading towards 1/3 are obese and 2/3 overweight. That doesn't make sense.
I get a little eager sometime. 10:50 now is just jumping in because I'm so excited about our guest this morning, the author of The Obesity Epidemic, Zoe Harcombe. If you have just joined it, I'm reading from the cover. There is a way to lose weight and keep it off, but the first thing you must do is throw away everything you think you know about dieting. Zoe, would you just, for those who've joined us midstream, just summarize what people know about dieting, which they need to ditch?
Okay, they think to lose weight, they need to eat less and or do more. And we have known that that just never works. The first study done on that was back in 1917 by a chap called Benedict, and he took a dozen young men and tried to put them on a calorie deficit diet, and of course they did lose weight in the short term. People will be very familiar with this. They didn't lose anything according to a formula. Again, the proof that there is no formula. But then they regained the weight and more. And America actually did the definitive study in 1945, a chap called Ansel Keys, who got a very bad reputation, quite rightly, over what he then went on to do with animal fat and heart disease. But he did a very, very good study in the 1940s. The Minnesota starvation experiment, he took some conscientious objectors, put them on a low-calorie diet while the war was going on, just to see what happened if, you know, rationing became starvation. We had no idea. And he managed to get these guys to lose weight, again, to no formula. They didn't lose anything like what was expected. And the minute he said to them the experiment is over, the guys gained all the weight back and then plus about 10%. Now listeners will be saying, that was me. I went on my first calorie-controlled diet. I lost weight. I regained it. And then a little bit more. So I went on another one. I lost it. I regained it. Because the body just continually adjusts. You know, if the body is used to getting, say, for a female, 2,000 units of energy a day, I don't like the word calories, and men are used to getting, say, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 units a day, and then you say to the body you're only going to have 1,000 or 1,200, the body will adjust and say, okay, that's what I now need to live on. But you can't live on that, because you get hungry, you get miserable, you get irritable, and there's food around us all the time, and the body will just drive us to eat it. So just don't ever try to eat less or do more. It's not about eating less. It's about eating the right things. It's about eating better and eating what your body needs.
There's a myth out there saying that animal fats are also connected to heart disease. And this new research that just came out showing that 72 academic studies involving more than 600,000 participants showed no link between the consumption of saturated fat and heart disease. So this is revolutionary that this information is finally coming out. So this made the news in Britain, right?
On the one hand, I was really excited, but on the other hand, I was really angry, because it's like, well, how was the connection ever made in the first place?
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it defies all logic. Every food that the planet provides, you know, virtually all of them contain fat. So nature has put fat in animal foods, in nuts, in seeds, in olives, in avocados. You know, look at your blueberries label. Next time you get some blueberries from the supermarket, you might be surprised to see that there's some fat in there. And then when nature puts fat in foods, and not many people know this, it always puts all three fats in at the same time. So there are people walking around on this planet who think that there are some foods that only contain saturated fat, and they are wrong. Mm-hmm. Every food that contains fat contains saturated fat and monounsaturated fat and polyunsaturated fat.
Zoe, I wish we had more time. Just a couple of quick questions. Did you say you were 110 pounds?
I am, yeah. I'm quite short. I'm quite petite.
Do you have to wear little, lead weights in your skirt on a windy day so you don't blow away? My goodness.
I'm a jeans person rather than a skirt person. But I'm pretty robust. You know, nobody would look at me and say I'm skinny. You can see photos of me on the internet. They look at me and say I'm slim and healthy. But, you know, I'm not skinny. I think Cheryl Cole is an inch taller and a stone lighter or something. It's like, that's skinny. That's not a good look.
Are you... Are you pleased that the image of who is the ideal woman, that the wafer-thin models, that whole image of what's perfect is starting to change?
Oh, I wish. I mean, unfortunately, the magazines in the UK, you know, you just look at them whenever you walk past the newsagents, and they are still, you know, this celebrity has gained 1 pound and this celebrity has lost 1 pound. They're still completely obsessed with weight gain, weight loss. They're not interested in putting any female on the cover who looks like me, who just looks like a normal weight person. They're only interested in you if you're fat, if you've gained weight, or if you're skinny, or if you've lost weight. And I wish that would stop. And I would love to see the covers full of people who just look normal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's certainly not happening in the UK.
Yeah.
Okay, we're almost out of time. Pam, where can people find out more about Zoe Harcombe and her book?
Zoe has quite a few websites I'm looking at here. One is the zoeharcombe.com, and you have the Harcombe Diet Club as well, which is the harcombedietclub.com. So, and you're on Facebook, you're on Twitter, you have a YouTube station, so there's lots of resources for people to look up your information. And your book is called The Obesity Epidemic, What Caused It? How Can We Stop It?
And is it true that the Queen and her family drink real milk, Zoe? We've talked about that a number of times. Real, like unpasteurized milk?
I would hope so. I mean, that would be fantastic. Prince Charles actually is really, really good in terms of meat and milk and the environment and real food. He's a real sort of old-fashioned guy. So I think he could well actually have raw milk on his farms. That would be wonderful.
Zoe, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Again, in our minds, you have a delightful accent. Don't take any offense.
Thank you.
And all the best with your book. We hope it's a runaway success for you.
Thank you so much, and I've really enjoyed the hour. Thank you so much.
Terrific. Time to go for tea. Okay, go ahead, Pam.
And I just want to make an announcement. I have some classes coming up in April and May, starting next Wednesday, so people can find out more information on my website, which is just pamkaleen.com, and you can go to upcoming events. The April 2nd class is a two-part class about the decline of human sexuality. So why are we seeing so many problems with infertility, low libido, erectile dysfunction, and so on? We need to get to the bottom of these problems.
Wow. With all the things she has on the go, Pam is writing another book. Unbelievable. Pam, always a pleasure. Thank you so much. 11 o'clock news. When we come back on the other side,